Good morning, everybody. My name is Andreas Jäger. I work at SUSE. I've been involved with the OpenSUSE project for ages. And a couple of years ago, I decided during one of SUSE's Hack Weeks to share some of that OpenSUSE love with the OpenStack project. So I started documenting in the OpenStack install guide how to install OpenStack on OpenSUSE. And that got hooked me into OpenStack documentation and later on into the OpenStack infrastructure team. And some of what I've learned about OpenStack infrastructure, I found very, very surprising. And on a scale, and a way of working that was quite different to what I've used to do. So I want to share some of that and give an overview of how OpenStack works on the infrastructure side. And how you can contribute to that on the other side. So let me introduce very briefly in a very high level what OpenStack is. OpenStack is a cloud infrastructure system. It's open source software. It's used to build private and public clouds. So there are a couple of public clouds out there. Recently, Deutsche Telekom has launched in Germany a public cloud for that. Rackspace is using it, and there are many other public clouds out there, and lots of private clouds. And it allows you to abstract from the standard hardware that we're using, shared services, so if we call compute, running a virtual machine, it allows you to abstract the network, which allows you in your own virtual machines to run your own private network, your own connection between those, and also storage for that. And there are a couple of other services as well that you can use on that, but that's the base, that's the fundamentals. To administrate that, you can either use command line clients, the APIs that are existing, or use the OpenStack dashboard called Horizon. And interact applications between those where they're running. OpenStack itself was founded by NASA and Rackspace 6 years ago. And today, more than 200 companies are involved with that. The last summit had more than 6,500 people there, so there's a lot of demand, perhaps also some hype for OpenStack. And releases are done every 6 months. And if you look at the names of those so far, you will see the alphabet. And if you look no closer at the names, you also see that those are mainly locations, places close to a summit. So the last summit was in Austin, and that was a summit for Newton. So Newton is the next release, and Newton is a house, a public building in the center of Austin. Vitaka, the summit before that, is a location in Tokyo where the summit was, and so on. So you can go through all the places. Okata is something, not sure what it, some name close to Barcelona, where the next summit will be in October. So let's look at Mitaka. The 13th release of OpenStack came out in April. It had more than 5,900,000 lines of code of changes. To get those changes into the repositories, more than 200,000 reviews were done, more than 31,000 commits by more than 2,000 people. That work for either haven't given their organization or work for more than 200 organizations. So that all those changes were all done during half a year. So how does an org, and it's interesting to look at behind those numbers, how those contributions can be made and what needs to be done for that. If you look at contributors, you have a lot of different companies contributing. People that do it just for fun, like it's open source. People, companies like SUSE, like others that are commercial entities. You have non-profit organizations like CERN that are part of that, was NASA, national and local governments. And the number, quality, and also the area of contributions can change any time. People can contribute where they want. There's no central stuff. That might change daily. People are joining the project every day. People are leaving as it grows. And looking at the CI infrastructure, I like this the sentence here, this quote from Alex that he mentioned. He thinks that's the most insane CI infrastructure, so CI stands for continuous integration infrastructure, that he's ever been part of. So how does that look like on the contributor side, if you contributed? There are a couple of projects, and I'm not going into to explain all of those, that OpenStack consists of, and that you need to run an image, to run a virtual machine. You need to start an image, you need networking, you need storage, you want to have billing, you want to have metering, you want to have orchestration, and so on. And those consist of server projects together with client projects that allow you to connect with them on the command line, or you or program applications from that, orchestrate about that. And there are also some so-called horizontal efforts or programs that go over the whole projects. As I said, I'm contributing to both documentation and infrastructure. There are also a couple of common libraries called Oslo Project. All of that code is written in Python. There are a couple of Python libraries, including a theming, so that all the documentation follows the OpenStack brand. There's quality assurance. Quality assurance doesn't mean, like some of you are used to it, that somebody is manually testing the code. Everything here is done in an automatic way. So the main job of the QA team is writing the tests that can be tested and giving an infrastructure for integration testing, for upgrade testing, for unit testing. There's release management, as usual. There's internationalization, translation of strings, of websites, of documentation. And for sure, every piece of software has its security bugs. So there's also vulnerability management. If you look at the release management, it's the normal stuff, I would say. Time-based releases, I said, every 6 months. There's each summit, there's a design summit for each cycle. It's played into where all the developers are meeting. So all of those, we had more than 1,000 developers meeting in Austin for that. And what's special here is that we directly develop on master. We have continuous open branch. There might be some projects that have it, freeze it in some ways, but that's not a general setup. And there will be inter-cycle milestone releases like we just had in OpenSUSE alpha release. So there are also alpha and beta releases for some of the projects, and some of the projects have different schedules when they release, and all of that is done via the release team. And there are stable branches that are supported by the project so that you can put them into production and get backports, get fixes for any issues set up. So we're talking here about not as a project, we're talking about the infrastructure, and some of those are challenges. We have more than 1,100 Git repositories. Every week, another repository gets added to that. Some weeks, it's 20 or 30. So the project is growing, and all of that needs to be scaled. And many of these projects, many of these repositories need to work together. You want to install a public cloud or a private cloud where all those components work together, can be installed together, and run together. You don't want to run into incompatibilities like the same as we're doing with OpenSUSE, where you want to have all your applications work on one environment and not decide, okay, today I'm installing Firefox, tomorrow I'm installing LibreOffice, but I can't install them at the same time because they don't coexist. That kind is the same situation. One goal is here with the continuously open master that we don't want to break master. We always want to have an open trunk that works. Part of that is we need to do syntax checking. Part of that is complete automated testing to support that. And also what's important here and what surprised me when joining, since I came via the documentation part, it's a consistent infrastructure for everything. So it's not the documentation team handles contribution a different way than system administration is done, then project A does versus project B. It's all the same. So if you know how to contribute to one of the official OpenStack projects, or if you start as an unofficial project and just have your repositories hosted, or whether you work on documentation, infrastructure, Obviously, you work on personas. It's all the same workflow for contributing, all based on Git. And that workflow basically means you have a master tree. You clone that locally. You branch a work. You branch. Submit fixes on that one. Test locally. Run the tests locally. And then submit the changes to the review server via Git review. From there, it's automatic testing is done, and also peer review happens. I talk later more about that. If that doesn't work, the change you take the change back, amend the changes, so don't set put another change on top of that, but go forward and update the change in place, send another version, and if this one is fine, gets accepted, it goes into the system, goes again through testing, and I explain why that's important and very crucial for the philosophy of testing of OpenStack in a few minutes, and then it's in the tree and somebody else can work on that. And all of that happens in parallel. We have 100, 200, 300 patches per day get merged and tested. So, peer review, let's look a little bit at that one. Anybody of you can contribute to that. Anybody of you can contribute and review any kind of code. If you want to log in, just go there. Same as we can do this with OpenSUSE. And there are some special persons called co-reviewers that can also not only say the code is nice or not so nice, but they can say, that code is so ugly, it should not go in. It's a complete wrong way. Give it a -2 and block it completely. Or the other way, that looks fine, that should go in. And if two people have said it looks great, and are co-reviewers, so two people have given their +2s, then they can, so normally the second person hits the approval button and it goes through testing and merges. So we have here for that an automatic review by tools, and the testing that's done is done on different kind of infrastructure, so different hypervisors, KVM versus Xen, versus Docker, some of that, different storage backends. So a lot of vendors have their own CI systems connected to the OpenStack CI system and test, whether it's a NetApp or an EMC, or whether it's in that case for public, that's in the OpenStack infrastructure, whether it's testing Ceph or the LVM backend, all of those are tested for changes in those areas. Let's say continue to work. You test different databases and different operating systems. Another important part here is the gating. So first the change goes into the check queue, but after it gets accepted, it goes to the gate queue. The important point here is you have submitted perhaps a code a week ago. So as part of that check testing, it gets merged to master of the branch in case you weren't at the master and gets tested. But in a week, a lot of happens, not only in the repository you're on, but also in others that you're testing against. So before the code merges, we merge it again as a test to current master, to current head, and then test again, run all the tests again. If one of those tests fails, okay, the code cannot go in. It worked fine last week, but it doesn't work anymore. So it shouldn't go in. We always want to have a working version, a tree that works. So when I start with in any project and check it out, I can be sure that it works. I know it passes all syntax check, it runs. There might be bugs in it that I will hit, there might be some races that I hit, but it passed in this state already the tests or basic tests. So I can start from that. If anything fails in my local testing, it was my code. It wasn't somebody else that misapplied a patch. And it's the same process here for everybody, for all of the projects. So I said we have 200 patches merging a day, sometimes more, sometimes less. And some tests take 2 hours. If we merge those and wait until they are merged, we could only merge 12 changes a day. Start one, wait until it's merged, okay, takes the next one. Takes us 2 hours for a test, in 24 hours makes 12 tests. So what are we doing? We run them in parallel, but we are in pseudo-parallel, I would say. So let's say we have three changes that have been approved for one project. So call them A, B, and C, and we test in parallel all three of them. The first one, which was approved first, we merge it against head and test it. Then afterwards, we merge the next change against merge A and B and test it. And the same with C, we test A, B, and C and test them and start all of them. If that one tests fine, we merge it. Let's assume that one fails. Then we have to start this merge again here. So test C again. So merge, but this time we merge A and C and test that one. That gives us a state of what, not only of that repository, but if we do an integration test, we all the repositories tested against, then we know this NOVA change was tested against that client change and that change in a specific version. So we can reproduce that. It's not some random version, it's not the version from this morning, it's a specific version of the head of all the repositories tested together. So we know those work together at this point of time. Then the next change comes in. There's also a chance here to test, since we have connected repositories, dependent repositories, work server and client projects, that you want to test merge things in a specific order. So you can say as part of your commit message, this change depends on another one. Then this order will be respected and will be also respected for testing. So the patch will be applied first. If you do integration testing of client and server, the server project might depend on the client project might depend on a server test and gets applied to the source, test together, and then merge together. The same for gating in this order. Another thing that hit us with so many changes, that changes were approved and then merge failure. A week after, it takes a week to go for some projects it might take a couple of weeks, for some it might take a few hours. But let's just say it's a week and many changes in between were done, so you might have a merge failure. So what the OpenStack project has done here is, after each change merges, they test all the other open changes and see whether they still apply against our current head. And if one of those doesn't apply, the contributor gets an email, and it's also shown at the review board that this change cannot merge, it's not mergeable. So you know and can resolve the conflict, merge it again, and submit a new version. Instead of somebody reviewing it and saying, and then starting tests or waiting, that gives you a much faster turnaround. So how are tests done? Tests are done in a similar way like we do with the open source build service. For each build in the open source build service, we start a new virtual machine, the same. This is done via an OpenStack. For each test, a new virtual machine is started. The tests are run, the virtual machine is stopped. And right now we have over 700 virtual machines as quota in variety of different clouds. Rackspace is donating the biggest part of that, but there are also OSIC, that's Rackspace and Intel lab. And OVA, OVH, Bluebox, and Internet, different providers. I think OVH is sitting in France, and all of those different clouds, workloads, use workloads and provide workloads. And OSIC just asked the infra project, hey, can we set up another lab? We need a very heavy workload for testing, and I think you could give us one, because that's IO-wise and networking-wise, quite a stress test. So, what parts are in that CI infrastructure. You need a bug tracker. Everybody needs one. So the project started using Launchpad. In the meantime, the project had to do for several, because of its size, develop their own solutions. So Storyboard is currently getting developed. That will replace the bug tracker. Everybody uses Git. That's a safe bet. Garrett for code review, also used by many projects. Zool has been written by the OpenStack project as a scheduler. At one point, A single Jenkins wasn't able to handle all the kind of jobs. We have right now, I think, over 10,000 different tests that need to be run. And if you want to run them all in parallel, 700 virtual machines, one Jenkins cannot handle that. So instead of running one Jenkins, we had, until last week, we had eight different Jenkinses running, and we used Zool to distribute the load to them and orchestrate that, basically. And Gearman was used as part of that in the process to distribute it. And NodePool is used to, it's also written by the OpenStack project, is used to have a pool of servers. I explain NodePool a little bit better later on. So how does it look like? You have local changes submitted via Git review. They go to Gerrit. They go to Zool. Zool figures out which jobs needs to be run. Distributed to the Jenkins, and also run the virtual guests, the virtual tests. Then we have in each cloud a mirror for the Python packages and for distribution packages, so that they are close to the workloads. There is a GitHub mirror, there is Git OpenStack mirror. There are lots of mirrors to reduce network traffic between clouds. But all of that is needed. And last week we changed the infrastructure. So instead of Jenkins and calling Jenkins in a very limited way, you know, if you're using Jenkins, you know that Jenkins has lots of options and is very powerful. But the OpenStack project was using only a very limited part of that because of that integration with Zool. So they've thrown out Jenkins, and instead we now have 7 Zool launchers. That use Ansible to launch the workload and run that and report back. So, how does a busy day look like? This is not a normal day. We have right now in the check queue 670 changes submitted for different projects, for different repositories. 27 changes have been approved and they are going through testing right now. The topmost change here is in the gate for nearly 5 hours. And all of those changes, so this is change A, B, C, have the other changes applied in order and test in parallel. And once the first one has passed the test, it merges. And this one will wait for merging until this one is merged. And if that one fails, it has to start again, which gives us sometimes a very long queue in that year. And we have also so-called post jobs. So those are jobs that sync after change has merged, sync strings to the translation server, publish documentation. If manuals are built, publish them to the documentation server, upload artifacts like tarballs and so on. All of that is done via low priority queue, so that takes a little bit longer time. And if you look at the statistics, it's on the same page here. If you go there, you see that at that point when I did this screenshot, there was quite a long time where no load was working on, and then it needs to catch up. So we had the limit here of the servers and have Gerrit events here per hour, up to 600 events that interactions with Gerrit, where people submit code or review it, and a pretty busy day as it one. So far, how it looks like basically on the contributor side. Let's look at the infrastructure side. Let's look at the other side. How can such a beast tamed? How can such a beast run? The infra team runs a couple of services that are used for development. In many cases, that's the usual kind of mix, so no much surprises. IRC bots for communication, Etherpads, Git, a paste service, a planet, mailing lists, wiki, whatever. But an important change here is, and that's something I haven't seen so much in any open source project, and especially not on this scale, is that all the administration is done, is treated as code. And this is the extreme view of, in one spec, in one proposal, let's do all the. Let me read it. We consider every command typed by a router, by a root person, to be a bug. We think system administration tasks should be performed by robots And we think inputs to the robots should go through code review. So system admin is, if you know how to code and code review, you know it's the same workflow for system administration here. So paradigms here, we use infrastructure as code. We treat the infrastructure the same as we treat code. It gets reviewed, it gets deployed. There's collaboration on system administration. It's not a single person that has all the knowledge and does all the administration. There's collaboration on that. There's peer review. And everything, as much as possible, is automated. The goal is to automate everything, but you can't do. So if you look at that, you see that everything is public. So all the services are available without restrictions. Anybody can review. Anybody of you can contribute also to the infrastructure. You can check out the Git repository, make changes to that one. Submit it, and somebody reviews it and looks at that and sees, does it make sense? Not who submitted it, but does it make sense? Is it beneficial for us? Is that what we want? And there are discussions on IRC, not only for infrastructure, but also for the other projects together with public archives, so you can look at what's going on there. Peer review for system administration? Yes, so we do multiple changes, multiple eyes on changes prior to merging. For some of that, you wait even for consensus of the complete team. There's not two people is not enough. We need some more because you want to have consensus. And if you have a worldwide team, there are people working on infrastructure in Australia, in the US, worldwide, in Europe. Having a central place to look at that will help. So it's also a good way to work together, develop new solutions. And there's no special process to go through. You don't have to approve somebody to give them SSH access or whatever, to give them any extra means that they can contribute. Everybody can contribute that part what they want, and then it gets reviewed. And it helps also a lot with such a large team to be collaborative by default, because everybody, it's peer review, everybody sees it. Still, we do a lot of automatism, like we do for code. So for code, for Ruby code, for C code, you have any kind of linters. You check whether the syntax is fine. You check whether the style is fine. The same you can do with shell scripts. The same you can do with Puppet scripts. The same you can do with Python code and run through the user checks, which means I don't have to knit and say, put a space more in here. Add an extra line over there because it looks nicer. We have automatic tests that do all of that. And if one of those tests fail, then the contributor has to fix it. But it's not me that has to review whether all of those are in the same way. We try to pass files where possible. We cannot deploy all of that. So that's why, because you can't change test whether something works as is directly in some cases. But we can go as close to that as possible. And we can also look at all the style checks that we have. We can check that certain files are in alphabetical order and so on. And once after the peer review, something merges, we have automatic deployment. So I talked yesterday with somebody here where he mentioned that for deploy something on the OpenSUSE wiki. Changes for that go into Git repository, but then go to a committee that decides when it gets deployed. For OpenStack, that's not the way. If I approve a change, it gets tested, it merges, and then Puppet runs and deploys it. So either the Puppet master gets updated and applies the change, or depending on what it is, Puppet runs, checks out the Git repository, and deploys from there. So we have automatic deployment of less than 1 hour for every change that is there. For some of that cases means we can also revert in 1 hour directly if something is broken. Sometimes happens, sometimes you break stuff. Like I made the complete docs OpenStack website at one point unusable because due to a wrong HTTP access rule. That happens, then you can revert changes and merge them in again. But it's all documented what's done. It's not somebody fiddling on some lines and the person coming in next day doesn't know what's going on. But that also means you can't have a graphical user interface for doing system administration, because you can't peer review it. So when Jenkins was added to the mix, with a graphical user interface, the question is, how can we do that and administrate it from text files? How can we do infrastructure as code? So JJB was born. JJB is Jenkins Job Builder. We still use it with Zoo Launcher, and some people are using it also, many people are using it nowadays also outside of OpenStack. So it allows you to configure Jenkins jobs using simple YAML files. And it also allows you to write templates. And templates are very powerful. You can use a template and use that to tons of different projects. So you give it variable names, like name, and those get expanded and do some stuff. Here's another expansion. And work from there. Or you can group jobs together. In this case, like name minus tests, or most projects use the Python jobs group, and which consists of templates again. So it's a one-liner to add them to a repository, and you get 10 tests set up directly instead going through all of that or going into a GUI. And that allows also to peer review all of that, to see that it works, to see what's going on, but also to work remotely on that and offline on the Jenkins setup. You don't need to be connected to the internet all the time. You can make changes anytime and deploy them. So that was done. That kind of user interface is done for most of the things that is worked on. When going through the parts of OpenStack, of the CI infrastructure, I mentioned also NodePool. What are you doing if you're starting a virtual machine from scratch every time? You all know that starting the Linux kernel, starting a virtual machine takes some time. So you don't want to wait 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes for that one to start. You want to have your test earlier. So what OpenStack does instead, it has written NodePool, which allows to deploy and manage a pool of images. So there's a NodePool instance. There are images in each cloud, and NodePool checks, knows the quota of each cloud that we have. And by default, if no job is running, if the system would be totally idle, it would start, I think, 20 Ubuntu images, 10 CentOS images, and so on, and have them ready. So when a change is done and images are needed, we have already 30, 40 images ready for testing. And as soon as one of those ready images is used, another one is started up. At one point of time, if the system is very busy, we're using the complete quota, and that doesn't help us, that optimization. But for an idle system, if the system is not using the complete quota, we always have some workers waiting for jobs and can directly assign them to it. And NodePool knows the demand, so when a job merges, it gets told, I need that these kind of virtual machines, and takes care to start them as soon as the quota allows that. And we're also doing image building for that one. So every night, new images are built, and those images image build contain all 1,100 plus Git repositories at the state of where they are built. So we only need to apply to reduce network traffic the part that was changed from the morning, instead of downloading the complete repositories. As well, it includes, we don't install all the packages, some of them are conflicting, but we know which projects need which packages, and we put them all in the cache, so you can install from the hard disk, from the local disk instead, from the image, instead of going out and downloading packages. That makes it very fast to start those, and if your project only needs one or two packages, everything is set up, and you don't need to install them. So system administration itself of all of that is done normally via Puppet. Some of that is done via Ansible. So Puppet is running all the time, every 15 minutes, applying changes. For some of the tasks, we use Ansible as well nowadays. And everything of those for each server there's a module, a puppet module in Git that is handled this way. Still, for debugging, for exceptional tasks, there are a couple of root admins that can SSH into the machines. I don't have those permissions. I don't need it. I don't want it. I can do everything that I want via Git review. But the purpose of that is not to change any configuration, but it's manual tasks, running a file system, growing the hard disks, looking at some log files that we haven't made public yet because there might be passwords in it and so on. So configuration management with Puppet. As I said, everything is used Puppet. So for all the services that are running, we have one base image that is used, or one base image per OS, operating system and version, and deploy all the configuration, all the files, all the packages there with Puppet. Setting up a new server. If you want to set up a new server, let's say what some people have been working on is a translation test server that shows you the translated version of today of the dashboard. So you set up a new Git repository, call it Puppet minus translations, and then somebody is working locally and trying to write that Puppet module and do all the instructions to set up that server, to get the dashboard running, to get it connected to the translation server and download all the stuff that's needed. And once that is done, make a big change to the repository with all the Puppet scripts. And once that's set up, we set up a development server. That development server will use that Puppet receipt to get set up. And if there are any problems, we need to work in Git to fix the Puppet module until everything works. And then the next step, we can set up the production system. For some of that, it takes far longer than setting it up manually. Yes, but if there is any problem, if you want to upgrade it, if you need a second server of that, you can do it in an instant and it works flawlessly. So you have to invest in some parts for that, but the benefits of that are very good. And especially with an open source project where people can come and leave anytime, you don't want a single person setting up a system without any documentation. And if we set it up with Puppet, we have the documentation as part of that. We can do the peer review and ask for comments, for readmes, for whatever, where something is not clear. And then if that person leaves, let's set it up, and somebody else can take over because it's all documented. And we can be sure there's nothing hidden, nothing else. Still, how do you handle manual tasks? How do you handle updating, a major version update of one of the servers, either the operating system or let's say Garrett. So those are also done collaboratively. So there's scheduled downtime of that service. All of that is tested where possible on the development system. But then all instructions are getting prepared on an Etherpad. Something that surprised me when I saw it the first time. So they write down all the steps that needs to be done for the regular task, and then it's copy and paste well ahead before the server downtime, before they do it, review it. So several people look over it. How did we do it the last time? Okay, last time we did those steps. Can we do the same one? What did we learn from that one? Okay, this is the instruction to do it. Please review everybody, and then during the downtime, it's basically copy and paste those commands and waiting for the execution. But it's not a single person doing it, but it's a team doing it. If something goes wrong, the team discusses on IRC what needs to be done and moves forward on that. So a very collaborative way of contributing that allows also somebody that is new to that and wants to work on a special area to contribute easily. They can listen in, they see what's going on. They don't have root access, but that shouldn't be needed because you have all the instructions also in the Etherpad. And we discuss about that. And share via paste or whatever if anything goes wrong. Naturally, this has some limitations. So sometimes you really need to log into a server. and need to check some stuff, need to find out the best way to fight wiki spam. But once you know the best way to do it, you can write it into Puppet and get it through review and then merge the real way. It's infrastructure as code might be difficult for some cases, upgrades. And since everything is public, what to do with passwords? You don't want to leak your passwords for any external servers and so on. So there's a as part of Puppet, there's a Hero project where those are stored. And in Puppet modules, you can just say, give me the password for this and that, and it gets it. So you don't need to know the password to write codes that works and authenticates against something else. One of the roots can set up that password and keep it hidden from everybody else in a hidden database, but still you can write code using that, access it without leaking it out. So that basically is what I want to talk about. If you are more interested in OpenStack, www.openstack.org is the reference. There's also an infrastructure page and the documentation page. If you're interested in working on OpenStack and OpenSUSE or SUSE, there's a wiki page, an OpenStack portal in the OpenSUSE wiki. There's more information. We have a build project. We have cloud packages in the build service. You can look up the install guides. I wasn't responsible for the last versions that were done for those. I just took happily over that task. And if you want to have commercial support for OpenStack, you can also use our SUSE OpenStack Cloud product. I took some of those slides from the collaborative nature of the OpenStack project, so we're also sharing the slides we're doing. And so I've stolen some of that content, not all of it. So thanks to that. Okay, any questions? I've talked a lot. Hope I gave some good overview. If you want to talk, please go to the microphone that it's on the recording, that it's getting broadcast.
Mic check 1, 2. Is that on?
Okay.
Yep.
Not so much a question about the infrastructure, but you first gave an introduction to how this looks like from a contributor's point of view. So there's lots of automated tests. What do I do if a test fails? Do I have an option to log into the failing system to further investigate, or what are my options at this point?
If a test fails, most tests have log files. So you can, and those log files are available on Gerrit. So you can click on the failure on the test and get all the log files. And it's part of that job description is also figuring out, defining where the log files are that the test produces, so that they get uploaded and extracted from the system. Sometimes you really need to log into those systems. And in those cases, you can go to the IRC channel and ask an info person to hold a note for you, say your test is always failing. This job is, please hold that note when it finishes, and they add your SSH key to that one. And hold it for you.
Okay.
But that happens once or twice a month or whatever. I'm not seeing every single thread, but it's rare. But if that is really needed, it can happen, but it's a manual task.
Okay, thanks.
I just wanted to highlight, maybe you've heard of Git Builder. It's an interesting tool, and I thought it might be interesting for people who are not working in such an OBS context as you.
Okay.
Do you have any opinions about Git Builder or the like?
No.
Okay. Then I wanted to ask a very short question about NodePool.
Okay. I
personally have been trying to test on the cloud, and I can see it is of great utility. Does it support more than one development community sharing a NodePool?
Right now, NodePool interacts with one SUSE server. And you can have OpenStack is one development community in that regard, but also dozens of projects that work together. So I'm not sure whether you can have multiple entry points into NodePool, whether that makes sense. But if you share the testing that with having a common Git server, having a common Garrett or however you do it, and a common Zool server, that's possible. You can that brings those communities close together. But I cannot give you a definite answer on that one. I've never looked at notebook code in depth. Just see how it's used.
Are performance tests also run as a part of the CI for major breaking changes or something like this, like Rally or something?
There is some performance runs done, but that's very difficult since we have different clouds, and you can't predict really in which cloud the test runs, and the test might run give different runtimes in one cloud versus the other. But we record those times that you can look and then say, okay, let's look at the runtime of one test in a specific cloud, and can do that. And they are also based for to do performance testing, but with that approach, it's not optimal. It's not a perform. You can do some parts of it and compare, and there are also some of the tests that help you. So the Tempest framework logs for how long a test is run, and you can look what is the most longest running test, and if you see my test that I just added needs 20 seconds, then something is odd about your implementation or your test. But that's it basically. It's not a performance tool. It's more not correctness, reliability.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
Yes. Yep. So I have a question. I feel like there is a lot of complexity in OpenStack, and it's growing. Like the number of Git projects, it's insane. And the rate is growing, it's insane. So my question is, do you have processes for reducing the complexity? Like for example, if you have automated tests that never fail, they are basically meaningless. So you could have processes that would go in and remove tests over time, stuff like this.
What we do, what Zool allows, is to skip tests under certain conditions. For example, we run by if you have a Python project, you have your own documentation and you have your code. The default setup is we try to build every time the documentation and publish it on a server that you can look at the build documentation and not only see it has built but also review the build one. We also run all. We run the syntax checks, we run the lint checks, and we run the unit tests and the integration tests on that one. If you only make a documentation test, you don't need to run the syntax tests, the code tests. So there are ways in Zool that you can say, run this test only if a file here is changed. So run the docs test only if something in the docs directory is changed or the tox ini file is changed. And vice versa for the code, and you can do some of that optimization. But if you over-optimize it, you suddenly have no tests running at all. That's not good either. So you have to be careful with that. But especially for some of those long-running tasks, and you only do a documentation test, that's where many projects are doing it, you do that kind of stuff and run it. But I haven't seen a test that always succeeds, because that would show indeed show something is wrong with that test. But you have tests that succeed very often because you touch other parts of the code. Still, you want to have that one running. But it's always a balance what to test and what not. With currently 700 virtual machines, you reach that limit every day. So you think, what can you optimize away? What risks can you take? And what kind of integration testing do you want to do over which projects? And at what point of time? And where do we say, okay, we're not doing it? There's always a risk associated with limited resources. Okay, one more question? Or two? None? So I promised Lenz to finish on time so that he can start on time. Next presentation will be by Lenz over Ceph and what? OpenAttic. Okay, looking forward to that. Thanks.